I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan with the Allegheny Front, and I'm speaking with E.O. Wilson. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner for the books The Ants and The Naturalist. He's a Harvard professor and now the author of a new book, your first novel.
That's right.
Welcome to the Allegheny Front. Welcome back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back.
Well, you're here for one of the Rachel Carson Homestead events. Now, you've written this new book, The Ant Hill. Would you like to start off with a passage from that?
The book is mostly a story of a southern family over three generations adapting to the change from the Old South to the New South, adapting to clashes between classes and between developers and conservationists. But in the middle of this, I present as a kind of understory of the life and the struggles over four generations of ants, symbolizing the complexity of the natural world, which our hero in the book is trying to save. Here, then, is the beginning of the Anthill Chronicle. The queen was dead. In the first days, there had been no overt sign that her long life had ended. There was no fever, there was no spasms, no farewell. She simply sat on the floor of the royal chamber and quietly died. And as in life, her body was in prone and immobile, her legs and antennae relaxed. Her stillness by itself failed to give warning to her daughters that a catastrophe had occurred for all of them. She lay there, in fact, as though nothing had happened. She had become a perfect statue of herself. The deception was a result of the way the bodies of insects decay after death, where humans and other vertebrate animals have an internal skeleton surrounded by soft tissue that quickly rots away. Insects are encased in an external skeleton. Their soft tissues shrivel inwardly into dry threads and lumps, but their exoskeleton around them remains a knight's armor, fully intact long after the knight is gone. Hence, the workers were at first unaware of their mother's death. Her quietude said nothing, and the odors of her life, still rising from her, signaled, I remain among you.
As the Allegheny Front, as we look at children and nature and their environment, how do they get inspired at a young age to relate to the world?
The protagonist, a southern boy through and through, how did he become a naturalist? He becomes acquainted very early with a tract of old growth forest, a short enough distance for him to get there anytime he wants. And he does go back and forth to this beautiful piece of land and become familiar with the creatures he sees there that fascinate him. But he has one other thing going for him. He has a mentor, a professor who comes up from Florida State University and spends every summer there doing extended research over a period of many years of the longleaf pine forest. And this gentleman and his wife have no children, so they take to young Raphael as almost a surrogate son. And as Raphael explores, as a very small child, actually, starting when he's three or four or five, he learns how to and becomes fascinated with the process of hunting for new things, new organisms, you know, spiders, salamanders, frogs, odd-looking plants. He brings them to his mentor. He tells the boy what they are and talks to him about them, and the boy then goes out and hunts for more. Just as Rachel Carson said, take a child to the seashore, find a tide pool, give the child a bucket, send them to that pool, and tell them to explore it and find out what they can and bring back what they can find, being careful with what they pick up, but bring it back, and she will talk to them about it. There is nothing more powerful. One should never, in my opinion, plan on limiting your child's excursions into nature on a nature walk with adults and other children, especially in places where there are labels on the trees telling what the trees are. That can kill an interest in nature. A child has to be an explorer.
How was your childhood influential to where you are today?
the first part of Ant Hill is autobiographical. Not precisely, but I did. I should say I had the great advantage and privilege of being able to explore on my own in beautiful forest and stream sides.
Do you feel positive about children becoming defenders of nature and explorers of nature throughout their life?
Hard to call, since how much we commit to saving the living environment, not just the physical environment, but the living environment, depends strongly on how economic and political history unfolds in the next decade or so. But I've been calling myself a cautious optimist. Now I'm calling myself, particularly after incidents like the Great Oil Spill, a scared optimist. But I'm going to stay optimist because there isn't any other way to be.
Well, thanks so much.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.